Well, if you have any aches or pains or sprains or strains, you are listening to the right program. Hi, Larry Mueller here. That's what we'll be dealing with today with Lori Tyne Brody, Senior Physical Therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center, and Bill Boisenault, Associate Professor in the UW Medical School. They come by about once a month to talk with us about these kinds of issues. And certainly, if you would like to join in, you're most welcome. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Or if you're in Madison area, give us a ring at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call. We'll be glad to get you online. Lori, nice to have you back.
Good to be back. Nothing terribly exciting since I was here last, unlike Bill, who maybe has a little sciatic from sitting on a plane all the way from Italy, or maybe it was from sitting in those hard chairs in those cafes having biscotti and coffee.
Well, I mentioned I was working very hard over there. I was scouting for us and our show to see if there was a need for it over in Italy. And yes, they do have aches and pains over there, by the way, Larry.
They do.
I highly recommend that we set something up over there.
I think we should do a live show from there.
Yes.
Well, you know, the last time I was there, it was the shoes of the women that amazed me.
Yes.
And the potential for our work there in the foot problems and knee problems and hip problems and back problems related to the stiletto heels.
Yes, yes. There's a price that goes along with the fashion, the high fashion.
Yeah, exactly. Well, those heels have made their way to the United States too, so I guess we don't have to go to Italy to find those problems anymore.
Well, I tell you what, we have many people with issues, so let's go to the phones. And Stephanie in Wauwatosa is up first. Stephanie, hi. Thanks for calling.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
The reason why I was calling is that I have been having knee pain it's been going on for a couple years, but it's gotten worse. I like to jog, and recently I've been jogging on my treadmill, and while I run, it feels like it's popping a little bit, maybe.
Uh-huh.
And
then where does it hurt? In front, back, the inside? Does it swell?
It doesn't swell. It's kind of, it's on the front of the knee, but towards the bottom portion of the knee bone there.
Okay, your kneecap?
Yeah.
Thank you. what you probably have is a patellofemoral problem. That's the patella is the fancy name for that bone in the front of your knee, and the femur, the femoral component, is the bone that lies under it, and they make a joint together. And particularly in females, we see some malalignment problems that cause problems with your kneecap. And depending upon the origin of those problems, they're relatively easy to fix. But what you really need is a good evaluation by a physical therapist who can look at your hip. Sometimes the origin is your hip, too much rotation at your hip due to some weakness in your hip muscles. Sometimes it's just postural habit where your knees roll in and it creates excessive stress at your kneecap. Sometimes the problem starts at your foot where you have excessive pronation at your foot and that changes the alignment at your knee. Sometimes it's muscles that are too tight or too weak. So this is one of those problems where the cause can be multifactorial, and so you really need a good evaluation to find the cause so that you can treat the right cause. And that popping could just be some of that maltracking in the front of your knee.
Okay, so a physical therapist would be a good place to start with that?
That'd be a really good place to start, you bet.
And okay.
Stephanie, when you go in, bring your running shoes along because that can also be very helpful in the diagnostic process and helping put together a comprehensive treatment program for you.
Okay.
There are physical therapists also who specialize in running injuries and looking at the biomechanics of running. So if you're unsuccessful with this, you might think about seeing somebody like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
Yep. Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling. And Ken in Waukesha County, your turn. Hi, Ken.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have stage 2 of probably the previous caller's problem.
Oh.
Okay.
I started with patellar tendonitis about 15 years ago. I injured myself on a stair climbing exercise. And that's persistent. But more recently, I've been running for about 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
More recently, I've noticed probably in the last 3 or 4 years that my leg muscles seem to be very tight.
Mm-hmm.
And in the last 2 years, 2 years ago, I tore my right gastrocnemius.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, I tore my left gastrocnemius.
Okay.
Now my tibialis anterior, both legs, is very overdeveloped and constantly sore.
Mm-hmm.
It's not shin splints, I don't think. It feels more like muscle spasm.
Uh-huh.
So I can massage out the spasm, it's better, but it's an everyday soreness. I've had different specialties look at my problem.
Uh-huh.
Sports medicine. I had a gait analysis.
Mm-hmm.
I've had a podiatrist look at my foot. Everything's normal, except the overdevelopment of the anterior tibialis and the pain.
Hmm. So they're clear that it's overdevelopment of your anterior tibialis, not your posterior tibialis.
Yes. You
okay.
can see it. It's plainly visible.
Huh. And what did the gait analysis show?
Nothing normal. No
okay.
problem.
Okay.
Football is fine. I don't, supinate or pronate. Everything is fine.
Okay. All right. Do they do any EMG analysis?
No.
Okay. And your biggest problem is, what, are you having pain?
Yes.
Okay. And the pain is where?
The tibialis.
The tibialis anterior
and,
muscle?
And, yes. Uh-huh. Bilaterally. And also in the patellar tendon.
In the patellar tendon. Okay, the patellar tendon is a different animal, and that's different from the previous caller who had patellofemoral pain. Patellar tendonitis, especially if you've had it, for however many years you say you've had it, can be a very difficult problem to treat. Tendonitises, particularly patellar tendon, Achilles tendon, are notorious for being hard to get rid of. So I don't know if you're having some compensation at your ankle for your patellar tendonitis problem. It's a little hard over the phone given how many practitioners you've seen, how many analyses you've done. It looks like you've not overlooked any major issues. The only other thing might be looking at an EMG analysis of your gait, not just looking at a video, looking at the kinetics of your movement, but also looking at the kinematics, doing an EMG analysis to look at your muscle activation, see if that's normal.
Okay, what specialty would do something like that?
There are physical therapists who can do that at a running clinic, Brian Heiderscheid at UW in the PT program, mm-hmm. and at Research Park runs such a gait analysis lab.
Mm-hmm.
How about in the Milwaukee area?
I don't know off the top of my head anyone who has those facilities in the gait analysis area. I actually talked to the PT department at Marquette.
Okay.
There's a kinesiology specialist there, Don Newman, who might be able to direct you.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Ken, I'm assuming, have you shut down running for any length of time during this process?
Yes.
And then as soon as you start back up,
well,
the symptoms come back?
No, actually the problem seems to get worse when I'm not running.
Okay.
How
strange as that seems, yeah.
Has anyone looked at compartment syndrome?
No. Well, I've been to sports medicine, Medical College of Wisconsin Sports Medicine Department.
Yeah,
that's kind of what I was thinking. Yeah. That's what you have to be careful of, is not developing into.
Yeah.
Compartment syndrome, and where the area of the lower leg you're talking about is a very common place for it to develop.
Mm-hmm.
And you can end up getting compression and involvement of nerves and blood supply. You'd be getting symptoms like numbness and tingling besides the pain that you have, but can we just describe the spasm in that area and the pain? We have to be careful that it doesn't develop into that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. the hypertrophy you're describing would put you at risk of that problem, and that's one of the things that's been in the back of my mind also.
Right.
So if you haven't had that really evaluated well, it's another place you could go.
Mm-hmm. All right. Good luck, Ken. Thank you very much. Boyd in Milwaukee, it's your turn. Hi, Boyd.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
And hello to your guests. A few years ago, about a little over four to be exact, I did have a meniscal tear, and I was not able to get a sculpt, but I did go to a physical therapist in sports medicine at UW-Milwaukee and was able to get some treatment. Overall, I can function okay. Just a couple things that I can't do is I still have trouble with my left leg, fully straightening it, because I think, a little cartilage is blocking it. And I have trouble, for instance, sitting in the lotus position. I have taken up yoga, and I wanted to also take a martial arts course, but it wouldn't be that aggressive. I guess my question is this. I still would be interested at some point at taking the scope. Some people and have that cartilage removed. Some people I know have taken it. They've recovered fine. Others, though, said they still have problems. What would you recommend?
Oh, what a great question that is. If you have something that's blocking your motion and you're not able to fully straighten your knee, I'd get it out.
Okay.
Because that is causing abnormal mechanics at your knee. Your knee is a really fairly well-tuned instrument in terms of the interrelationships between the ligaments and the meniscus and the articular cartilage. And you bring up a really good point. Some people do really well, and some people have a terrible time afterwards. And there's that much variability in meniscus problems. So you can't say, you know, well, so-and-so had a meniscectomy, and they did well, so I should too. Depends upon the kind of meniscus tear you had, the location of the tear, a joint damage that was done at the time of the time you tore your meniscus, and joint damage that's occurred since then. So if you have something that's blocking your motion, you're putting too much compressive force on your joint surfaces, and you're going to tear up your joint surfaces.
Okay, that sounds great. Thanks so much, all of you.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Yeah, I had that surgery and that scope, and it worked great for me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It took you a while to get over it, though, Larry.
Right.
I remember that.
I had to do quite a bit of PT work, but once that was over, it's been great since.
Yeah.
It probably depends on just how healthy the knee is heading into the procedure and how long it's been since the injury. Like Lori said, the extent was there other damage besides the meniscal injury? But Lori's right. We can compensate. We can get by with losing a little bit of the bend in our knee, but to be able to fully extend it, we need to be able to do that.
Well, I can get down to first base a little faster now.
All right.
Let's go to Patricia in Appleton. Hi, Patricia.
Hi there. About a year ago at the gym, and I'm a very active person, even though I'm a little overweight, but I'm very active. I dance, I do folk dancing, Morris dancing, yoga. I'm a yoga teacher. At the gym, I know I developed a heel spurs. I was in one of the machines, and the next day it was very hard to walk. This got worse and worse and worse, so I went to the physical therapist, and she evaluated me. She looked at my hip, the way I walked, et cetera, and she recommended some ultrasound and also some other therapy in which she was delivering medicine to the heel through some electric little device. Mm-hmm. Nothing worked, and it's been a year, and I am in constant pain. And I don't know what to do. I really need my feet. Do you have any suggestions?
Did she try anything besides the ultrasound and the iontophoresis? Any orthotics or exercise?
I am wearing orthotics, and I do hip exercises to strengthen the hip, evidently. I am wearing the cheaper ones. What are they called? Walk Fit, something like that. That really helps. Otherwise, I couldn't walk some days. But if I'm barefooted in any form or shape, any way, any surface, I am in pain again. So I'm wondering, is this ever going to go away? Am I doomed to wear orthotics for the rest of my life?
Well, the answer to the last question is probably yes. You probably are going to need to wear orthotics the rest of your life. And it's hard to say without looking at your feet, but it's not unusual for plantar fasciitis to last a really long time. You don't usually develop plantar fasciitis overnight. You don't develop a heel spur overnight. The heel spur is simply a sign that you have chronic traction on your plantar fascia. Have you done any stretching or strengthening for the tissues on the bottom of your foot?
Stretching, yes. I stretch my calf muscles all the time.
Okay.
Any kind of stretching, I was told that's the way to go.
Okay. What about your toes? Do you stretch your toes up? Okay. That's going to be...
Up, you mean flexing my foot up?
No, your toes. Bringing your toes up towards the ceiling. Yeah, that's a really important stretch for that component of the plantar fascia and the intrinsic muscles there. So I'm not sure that you've mined all the possibilities. How are you first thing in the morning?
Very bad.
Have you tried night splints? Have you tried night splints?
No, I just didn't want to go that far yet.
Okay, well, it's been a year. And yet, let's see, I thought I heard you say, is there anything I can do?
Yeah,
I'm in constant pain.
At this point, I'm willing to do
I'd
do
say
anything.
You're there, Patricia.
Yeah. it's kind of funny to wear those. I've seen pictures of them, and I don't know.
Not very sexy.
Yeah,
they're not sexy, but maybe orthotics, in your heels aren't sexy either. I don't know.
Right.
I wore them and they helped. And I know a number of people who have worn them and helped. So, and there's other various forms of arch support that may be more suitable for you. But there are other possibilities out there. So I'd either go back to the person you saw or see somebody else who specializes in feet. Bill, I don't have anything else to add.
Well, the one thing too, Patricia, the knee splint isn't necessarily something that people use for the rest of their lives as opposed to the orthotics. So the knee splint is really designed to get this to settle down and calm down for you. But it's not meant, typically it's not something you use forever.
Okay. If that makes you feel better.
If there's any consolation.
Yeah, the knee splint just puts that fascia on stretch during the night, so it helps lengthen it.
Right. And that's why stretching the toes are so important, because doing your calf stretch gets a component of the plantar fascia, but not like stretching through the toes. So you want to add that to your regimen.
Very good. Thank you so much.
Thanks for calling. And Betty in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, Betty.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question, but I'll explain what's wrong first. I have bursitis, and I go to an orthopedic surgeon, and I started, he recommended the sport clinic, so I started getting ultrasound. It's in my left hip. They've done x-rays. There's no deterioration. I'm an active person. I'm 74, and we bike ride, and we hike, and I swim. And I've been getting cortisone shots since last August, and my doctor told me, well, just go out and do what you're doing. Don't worry about it. Wait a couple of days, so which I have done. When I bike ride, it doesn't bother me. When I swim, it doesn't bother me. If I go up steps, I have to do one step at a time. If I walk any distance or go up a hill, I'm doing some exercises that they recommended, and I have this week left of the sports clinic, and they are doing the ultrasound. I don't know. There must be something else I could do. it gets a little better, but, then it's back to, yesterday it was bad. When I go up the steps, I go one step at a time. It seems if I increase the exercise a little bit at home, if I start walking, it gets worse.
Worse, okay. Mm-hmm. Bill, what do you think?
Betty, how long has this been going on?
Since last summer, I think I went to my doctor, I think in August, and he gave me a cortisone shot, and they've done x-rays a couple times. And the back, the lower back, the hip, the bones are fine.
Okay, good. Well, I'm glad they did some sort of screening of your back, because sometimes, and I'm assuming the pain is out over at the side of your hip?
On the left side, yep.
Yes, okay. Sometimes that pain can be referred from the low back area, but sounds like they've at least screened that region. Well, the key is to try to get muscle balance around that area of your pelvis and your hips. So that's flexibility and strengthening. Also, core strengthening, doing things up into for your abdominals and your back muscles, can also play a big part on the mechanics of what's happening at your hip with the hiking and walking and stair climbing, those things that you mentioned that bother that area. But also at the other end of the leg, has anybody looked at your feet at all?
No.
And footwear? Okay. Because that might be one other area, too, if that hasn't been checked, because that certainly impacts how the knee functions, including and also all the way up to the hip. Looking for anything that will just allow the hip mechanics to be a little more normalized and take some stress off that area so it can, in fact, heal for you. It sounds like they've done all the right things locally in that region, but kind of going outside the hip area might give you a little bit of longer lasting relief, more effective relief.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So are you doing stretching exercises for those muscles around your hip?
Yes. Yeah. I just started the stretching, too. I've just been at the sports clinic. This is my third week, so that's new.
Okay.
I'm wondering, I get the heat treatment, and when I swim, I've been going in the sauna or in the whirlpool, but my daughter, who's a nurse practitioner, said, well, maybe after you swim, you should use ice.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I would agree with that. The general heat treatments, the sauna, that temperature isn't really therapeutic in terms of the bursa or bursitis. You really need to apply the heat locally. And after you swim or bike or something like that, ice would be the way to go. Basically, you have some tissue, some muscle tendon-type tissue that passes over that hip bone, and there's a bursa underneath it. And every time you do a repetitive stepping activity, such as stairs, that tissue snaps back and forth across that bone, compressing that bursa, pop, 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 every time you take a step. So the key is to strengthen those muscles and stretch them out so it can minimize that.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Lori Tyne-Brody, senior physical physiotherapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center, and Bill Boisenault, associate professor at the UW Medical School, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller, Jim Packard, our producer, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking aches, pains, sprains, and strains with our two guests, Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault. Larry Mueller here, glad to have you listening in. Lots of people online, so let's go right back to the phones and to Sheila in Duluth, Minnesota. Hi, Sheila.
Hi. I have a question. My father-in-law took a little spill on his motorcycle a couple months ago, and one of the first things he noticed was that he thought he dislocated his shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
But he had some other injuries that took precedence over looking at the shoulder. He had some broken ribs and so forth. And by the time they got around to looking at the shoulder, it looked like it had popped itself back in.
Uh-huh.
And they said, we really can't find anything wrong with it. But now since he's been home, it seems to pop in and out, and his arm just, like, hangs way down sometimes.
Oh, my.
Have any idea what could be going on there?
How old is he?
65.
And he's on his motorcycle.
Well, yeah.
Not anymore. Well, there are a couple things. For someone in their 60s, if you dislocate your shoulder, you're more likely to tear your rotator cuff,
okay,
and that to give you ongoing problems. That being said, that's in a typical, maybe I fell down and dislocated my shoulder, not the magnitude of trauma of a motorcycle accident,
yeah,
which may have...
fairly slow on a dirt road. And so
on. Okay. Well, it still introduces a whole other level of potential problems.
Mm-hmm.
It's unlikely for people of his age to have a shoulder that continually dislocates. If you're 20 years old, you dislocate your shoulder, it's going to pop in and out. For someone in their 60s who dislocates their shoulder, the first thing you think is rotator cuff tear, but a rotator cuff tear isn't going to make your shoulder pop in and out. So the next thing I think is a nerve injury, some sort of nerve injury that's affecting the muscle's ability to hold the shoulder in place.
Okay.
So I would take him back to see somebody who's a shoulder specialist and have a good look at it, because this is not typical of somebody who's 65 and had a traumatic shoulder injury. There's something else amiss.
Yeah. They took X-rays, but I'm thinking there must be
some. No. That's just
it.
The most cursory glance, and
yeah,
they said, "Oh, nothing's broken," but there's a multitude of soft tissue problems that likely occurred.
Right, and Sheila, he goes in, the more details he can give related to the accident itself and when his shoulder does pop out of place, what it looks like, because there are a lot of nerves around that shoulder area, and depending on the direction of the dislocation, it should clue them into certain nerves to really look at closely. To check their health.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks, Sheila. Thanks very much for calling. Mary in Green Bay, we'll turn to you now. Hi, Mary.
Hi. Thank you for taking this call.
Sure.
Foot pain is my topic, and 2 weeks ago I took a walk. I walked as fast as I could. It was a very cold day, and I wore my ski socks in a pair of boots, Timberland leather boots with a hard sole, and since that time, the ball of my foot, it just kills me with pain. And if I push on it, it doesn't hurt at all. But if I stand on it or walk on it, it hurts like crazy. And I wonder if I should try hot water, cold water shock to my nerves or something.
Does it hurt when you're just sitting?
No.
Okay, but as soon as you put weight on it?
Yes.
Okay. Well, the first possibility that comes to mind, one of the more common problems in the ball of your foot is a neuroma or neuritis. So that's one possibility. The second is that you had some sort of injury to that arch of your foot, but that's less likely.
It's not the arch at all. It's between my big toe and the next toe.
Right.
Kind of right in that.
Right. Yeah, your foot actually has a couple of arches, not the big longitudinal arch, but there's transverse arches. So there's another arch underneath the ball of your foot. So that's what I was referring to. So a couple possibilities. It could be a neuroma, could be a little bit of irritation to the joint of your big toe that's causing some pain in the area, because when you walk normally, all the forces go out your big toe. Wearing that stiff leather boot may have changed your mechanics a little bit and stirred up your that joint of your big toe, and will give you pain with weight bearing. So you can try some ice, you can try some contrast warm then cold. But I'd probably go in and see somebody, particularly since walking is your exercise of choice, and it's you're not allowed to do that because of your pain. So if it's been a couple weeks and it's not getting any better, I'd probably go in and have someone take a look at it and get a definitive diagnosis and some treatment sooner rather than later.
Who would you suggest? What doctor?
Well, you could see a physical therapist, someone who specializes in feet.
Okay.
Or a podiatrist who specializes in foot problems.
All right.
All right.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Mary. And let's go to another Mary, this one in Toma. Hi, Mary.
Hello. I just wanted to give my own personal testimony on night splints. I was having an awful problem, similar to the one the lady was describing that had heel spurs. And after a week of night splints, I was cured in orthotics. I was cured, and that's all due to UW Sports Medicine.
Well, hallelujah.
I mean, I was just thrilled. My whole career was going before my eyes.
Yeah.
So it only lasted about a week and a half in night splints, and I forget what tendon or muscle it is, but whichever one it is, when we point our feet at night, it allows that to shorten up.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we put our foot down on that floor, oh boy.
Yanks in that area.
I did feel like I was trying out for a part in Star Wars because they're made of white plastic. But other than that, I was cured, and I really, really appreciate it. So,
Mary,
Mary,
how long did you have symptoms before you tried the night splints? Do you remember?
Oh, at least 2 months. I put it off for at least 2 months.
Okay.
And I'm on my feet at work, walking in and out of my truck 6 to 8 hours a day.
Wow. That's rough. Yeah.
Well,
so to be cured that quick, I was thrilled.
Absolutely.
Yeah, well,
thanks.
Good. Well, thanks for that testimony.
Yes.
I heard a lot of people nodding their heads when she described that pain first thing in the morning. There's people all over the state nodding their heads going, yes, yes. I know what she's talking about, so... It's serious.
Night splints work. Margie in Mount Horeb, your turn. Hi, Margie.
Hi. Well, thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about bunions. I've had them for 35 years, and I've never had pain with them at all.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm finding I can't get shoes because they're getting, of course, larger and growing, and I can't even get a pair of tennis shoes that are wide enough in the toe. The toes have not overlapped or anything, so I thought, well, I'll get it checked out. And it was recommended that I try these foot bunion regulators.
Mm-hmm.
And when I put them on at night, the ones that you wear at night, and they're like a splint with a pad, and there's some Velcro on them, and they push the big toe out.
Uh-huh. Okay.
But what happens when I take them off in the morning then is that the big toe actually flips all the way over to on top of the second toe. So I'm wondering if somebody, it's just like, oh, dear, this is not working. What's happening here? And I don't have any pain from wearing them. You know, my only problem is, and I'm thinking about having surgery just so I can get shoes.
Right, so you can buy the footwear.
Yeah.
Margie, is there a way, I'm assuming there's a way you can regulate how much tension or how much force you put on that big toe as you're pushing it out?
Yes, yes, there
okay.
is.
And have you modified that, you know, less force, more force, since you've had the splint?
Well, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I've done a little bit of a force. I started out with just a little bit, and then they flipped way over, and I thought, well, I'm not using enough force, so I went to the extreme, of course, and pushed it all the way out, and the toes really moved.
yeah, that's welcome. My thought was maybe it was just too much too soon or too much at one time in the beginning, but if you've tried small amounts of force and you're still doing that, then it's clear that it's overstretching tissue that is helping position your toe, even though it's not where you want it to be.
Yeah.
It sounds like you've given that a good try, and maybe it's time to try the the next plan.
Yeah, I would agree. But, you know, Margie, you make a really beautiful point for all the night splint people.
Mm-hmm.
And what you've done is you've essentially put a splint on your foot all night to stretch some tissue. And it has been so effective that it's actually overstretched it and your toe is too flexible the next morning. So for those skeptics, you can see that wearing a splint during the night will impact the soft tissues. So... Yeah, it seems like you're ready to go on to Plan B.
Yeah.
And Plan B is surgery.
Yeah.
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 But Margie, after the surgery, it would be important that they evaluate you. Once you recover from the surgery, they evaluate your foot for wearing orthotics. The surgery itself will take care of the bunion and many times the deformity, but doesn't take care of why it developed in the first place. And as active as it sounds you are, as much walking as you want to continue to do, once you recover from the surgery, someone should examine your foot related to orthotics.
And what do you mean orthotics? Does that mean there's something that would hold the toe in place?
No. Or? This would be more looking at the rest of your foot, like an arch support is an example of an orthotic. But they would want to design one specifically for your feet and examine your feet, your lower legs, and see what else they may do from an exercise standpoint to help make sure that bunion doesn't come back again.
Okay. Does that mean I can't wear heels?
No. No. I probably wouldn't recommend that you wear heels all day long, 7 days a week. But, there are times orthotics just are not feasible, and so you don't wear them at that time. But for your walking, walking for exercise.
And biking and that sort of thing?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Then you can easily wear the orthotics, and that won't interfere with your footwear or fashion.
Oh, okay. Well, we have to take care of everything here, you
exactly.
know.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do.
Well, you make an important point about the mechanics of walking. You know, when you have abnormal foot mechanics, what happens is you roll off the inside of your big toe, and that makes that bunions and pushes your toe mm-hmm. to the outside. And, you know, going back to Mary and her foot problem and the ball of her foot, what I'm wondering is if in that Timberland boot that she was in, if it changed her walking mechanics and she overloaded that ball of her foot position.
Yeah.
So there's some parallel there with the foot problem she was having.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thanks very much for calling, Margie. And Bob in Wauwatosa, your turn. Hi, Bob.
Good morning. This might relate to the toe stretching that your guests mentioned earlier. Let's see if it does. I have a problem with the toes on my left foot. My orthopedist has said that I have tight tendons. He says I don't have hammer toes per se, but tight tendons. And he suggested that I stretch my toes periodically. I have found that stretching them, pushing my toes downward helps, but not pulling them upward. There are times when my left foot is so painful, especially if I've been walking on hard floors for a long time, such as shopping at the mall.
Uh-huh.
I actually have to sit down and take my shoe off, and I get relief by pressing my toes downward and mm-hmm. then releasing and then mm-hmm. pressing them down and releasing, and there are times when that gives me complete relief.
Uh-huh.
But I don't know if there's a long term, are there some exercises I could do can this be helped by surgery? Mm. I'm over 60, but I'm in great shape. I don't have any knee problems or hip problems, and we hike and walk a lot.
Do you wear an orthotic, Bob?
Yes, as it happens, I do on both feet. I had plantar fasciitis in my right foot, which has been completely cured.
Uh-huh. With a night splint?
Excuse me?
What? How'd you get rid of your plantar fasciitis?
With an orthotic.
Okay, good.
Yeah,
right.
custom arch supports, and I wear them in both feet.
Okay.
In both shoes, I should say, and that's completely solved.
Okay.
But the toes are driving me nuts. I get this excruciating pain transversely across the ball of my foot.
Uh-huh.
And the orthopedist says it's not really in the ball of the foot. He says it's in the toe joints.
Uh-huh. Well, that could be, and that may be why you get relief when you bend your toes down, because what you're doing is you're shortening the tissue. If you have really tight connective tissue, and what comes to my mind is that when you're doing that walking, the little muscles in the bottom of your feet are working really hard.
Uh-huh.
And so they just get, it's kind of like you're getting a cramp or something when you
yeah.
overwork a muscle and then you stop. And sometimes stretching it the other way, if you think of a muscle that's got a cramp and you think about trying to stretch it, you think, that really feels like it's going to hurt. And what you want to do is shorten it the other direction to release the cramp. Sounds like that's what you're doing. So it makes me wonder if your orthotic needs to be modified a little bit. So probably the next step I'd take is to go back and see the person who made your orthotics. Tell them about the problem you're having with your toes and see if there's some way to modify your orthotic to reduce the stress on the little muscles in your feet.
Well, I had this problem long before I ever had custom orthotics.
Uh-huh.
This goes back decades.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So this predates the orthotics.
But nevertheless, the orthotics.
Right. But nevertheless, what I'm saying is that I'm not saying the orthotics caused the problem. What I'm saying is your orthotic, the person who made your orthotics might be able to tweak your orthotics to also address this problem.
Is there anything else I could, should I do routine stretching at night or?
You could try some stretching of your toes the other way, kind of like you do for plantar fasciitis, to see if you can lengthen that tissue.
And that would be I'd press the toes down like I do at the mall sometimes.
No, that would shorten them.
It would?
That's what you would do acutely to relieve the cramping kind of pain. But in terms of long-term management, what you'd want to do is lengthen the tissue. And strengthen it. There's also toe strengthening exercises that you could do.
Where do I find those?
I'd see if a physical therapist or whoever made you orthotic should be versed in those kinds of activities.
And that would involve pulling the toes upward.
Yep.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, the opposite direction that you're doing for relief. So,
okay.
Lori's right. Two different programs. One for instant pain relief, and that's do what you've been doing.
Great.
But the other direction for some longer term, hopefully minimizing the problem and getting rid of it.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Blazenalt, our guests. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking aches, pains, sprains, and strains with our two guests today, Lori Tyne Brody, physical therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center, and Bill Blazenalt, associate professor at the UW Medical School. Glad to have you listening in. Larry Mueller here. If you want to join us, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. And Mary in Chippewa Falls, I believe, is next. Mary, hello.
Hi. See, I've been having a lot of pain at the base of my right thumb. And I had it a few years ago, and the doctor gave me a shot of cortisone, which made the pain go away. And he said there wasn't anything I could do about it until I needed a joint replaced. Well, for the last few weeks, I've been really having a lot of pain. I can't even write comfortably.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to the doctor hoping for another cortisone shot, and it was a different doctor, and he got an x-ray, and I thought it was arthritis, and he did mention it was probably arthritis, but the x-ray showed that joint, that the bone was actually off of the other bone, so that, you know, it was like it was dislocated.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Is that common? What can they put that back, or what should I do?
Well, what did the doctor recommend?
I've got an appointment with a rheumatologist.
Rheumatologist,
yeah.
Okay.
But it just seems so odd to me. Several years ago, it happened to the other thumb, and that didn't hurt as much, and it was my left hand, and it didn't bother me as much. And now the muscle at the base of the thumb is kind of deteriorated on that hand, and I would like to do something to keep the muscle viable so that if I do have to have surgery. But have you ever heard of that?
Well, it's yes. The answer is yes, and that subluxation of bone slipping off a little bit can go along with some of the deformities that you see with certain types of arthritic conditions. You know, surgery is certainly a possible answer. Some splints can be designed by a hand therapist, a certified hand specialist. Would be something that you should see no matter what.
Okay.
And we'd probably recommend that before you would seriously consider having the surgery. Because
right.
There are certainly exercises to be done around the forearm, wrist, and hand, but there's a number of different kinds of splints that may help you significantly. And actually, it may help make the cures for you.
I even tried to design one, you know, but I couldn't get one that would stay on comfortably.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's one thing they do very, very well, is they would fabricate a splint specifically for you and the shape of your thumb and hand, but they would also examine your entire hand, wrist, and forearm area. And that's who I'd recommend seeing.
Mm-hmm.
It will?
Yes.
Wow.
So yeah, well, I can't, there's no guarantee, but that's
just the possibility flexibility makes me happy.
Yeah, but you should keep your appointment with the rheumatologist also,
yes,
because it, clearly because there's a pattern here, they're looking for any other kind of systemic rheumatoid problem that may be amenable to some medication or other interventions.
Mm-hmm. Good luck. Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling, Mary. And Larry in Wauwatosa, it's your turn. Hi, Larry.
Hi, thank you. Mm-hmm. I have a question about, I have pain in my left leg, primarily from the knee down. I've had it for about 8 months. I'm 69 years old. I wear sandals a lot, and I first noted it early last summer. My leg feels numb, and at night sometimes it feels like it's actually cold when it's not. And I have, and it feels like you're all the time, like right after you've had a muscle cramp, you know, like it's sore.
Okay.
Larry, is there a certain pattern of when this pain and numbness comes on, sitting versus standing versus walking?
No, I have it all the time now.
Okay.
And I do walk, but it's on all the time.
Okay. And does it get worse with walking?
I don't know.
Okay.
I continue to walk, and I try to wear good shoes or shoes that have got good supports and want to do walk, but I kind of keep going, but it's just always kind of numb.
Okay.
And it sometimes feels, even if I don't ever wear my billfold in my hip pocket anymore, because to do so adds aggravation to it.
Yeah, well, that's also what I was thinking. Have you seen a physician since this started?
No.
All right, well, that's what I would recommend. With complaints of numbness as well as the cold sensation, we have to worry about nerves getting compressed someplace or maybe vascular system, blood vessels getting compressed. And that could happen around your knee. It could happen up in the buttock, that hip area right where your wallet is, or it could even happen up in that lumbar area. If it's just simply pain and it wasn't there all the time, I might give you some other advice. But the fact that it's been around this long and the kinds of symptoms you have, that would be the priority for recommendation.
Mm-hmm.
Would you notice it more? Is there a reason why I notice it more in the toes or my lower, in my ankle down?
Well, it depends on if there is compression, irritation of a nerve or blood vessel. Depends on where the nerve or blood vessel is getting compressed, and that can account for where you have the most intense symptoms. But the pattern of what you describe of more intensity in the foot as opposed to lower leg is very common for conditions up in the back as well as in that hip area.
Okay. All right. Good luck, Larry.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Thanks a lot for calling. And Nanette in Monticello, your turn. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Give you a little background. I'm wanting to revisit the talk about bursitis in the left hip.
All right.
I've had severe rheumatoid arthritis for 20-some years. And I've also had foot surgeries because of that. I just got through a surgery in March of last year, a back surgery, where they did a fusion, double fusion of the S1L5 vertebrae. I was in a full body brace with my left leg held at a 30-degree angle with a brace. Mm-hmm. So that would give me less chance of turning or twisting, to give me the best chance of healing.
Right.
And the back is healing very well. I've been going through physical therapy and swimming and stretching. And what I want to talk about is I've heard about an operation called resurfacing.
Mm-hmm.
Would that be something that, you know, that could maybe help me? Because nothing really helps the bursitis.
Well, the resurfacing procedure is for a degenerative hip. The bursitis is a completely different problem. The bursitis is actually outside your joint.
Okay.
It's between the, you know, the bone on the outside of your hip and the soft tissues. The resurfacing procedure is for a hip that's degenerated.
Okay.
So you'd really need to talk to an orthopedic surgeon about the indications for that. I'm guessing with rheumatoid arthritis, it's probably not your first step in treatment if you have a degenerative hip.
Okay.
Right.
So.
Okay. Okay, I was just wondering if surgery ever does help.
Usually for the chronic bursitis, they don't do surgery too often. Every once in a while, at various joints, they'll do a bursectomy, and they'll, at the outside of the knee, sometimes they'll create a little window in the connective tissue to make a little more room for the bursa. But that's really in really severe cases.
Yeah, it's very much a last resort, and there's a lot of potential complications associated with that, with scarring and soft tissue tightness developing post-op.
I'm in no big hurry for another
six surgery. Yeah, no.
Thanks.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And Jim in La Crosse, we turn to you now. Hi, Jim.
Hey, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I've just been diagnosed with a Baker's cyst in my knee.
Mm-hmm.
And what I've been doing now is wearing a brace, heating it at nights, you know, half hour, maybe to an hour, and just kind of bending it here and there and then elevating.
Uh-huh.
You know, they said exercise. I do walk around quite a bit during the day, but at night I'm kind of, you know, just sitting on my butt, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the mornings when I wake up, I get up and just like I get shooting pains down right into my ankle, and then I get a tingling sensation just like, you know, if your foot fell asleep,
mm-hmm.
and then it starts to wake up, you know. It just, is there anything more I can do for this?
Well, you typically do not get tingling with the Baker cyst. Those two don't seem to go together. You may be looking at two separate problems there.
Okay.
What took you to the doctor for the Baker cyst in the first place? What were your symptoms?
Just my leg, you know, the knee area hurt and that, and then I, you know, like I say, stiffen up, and then I would try to stretch it out and so forth.
Did they do any x-rays or MRI or anything of your knee?
They did x-rays and then a scan, and they confirmed that it was a Baker's cyst. I was supposed to have an MRI done on the knee to, you know, for further evaluation, I guess.
Uh-huh. Okay. Because, the Baker's cyst is essentially kind of like a bubble on a tire. It's a weak spot in your capsule, and the fluid, you know, puffs out there like it would in your bubble on a tire. But the question is, why are you having a lot of fluid? Is there something else going on inside your knee that's causing you to produce a lot of fluid? Something like arthritis or a cartilage tear, meniscus tear, some other problem with your knee that's making it swell. So getting more information would be really good. In terms of the tingling, Bill's going to address that.
Yeah, I would agree. It's unusual with the people that I have seen with Baker's cyst to have that kind of complaint. And again, it could be something else directly around your knee, or the fact that the problems you're having with your knee that you're compensating when you are up and around on your feet, that could be impacting something up in your back or your hip. So, you know, again, I think if you can do it within your health plan to get that MRI, because Lori's right, it's unusual for a Baker's cyst to exist all by itself. Usually there's something else structurally going on with the knee that may need to be addressed.
Okay, yeah, because I do, if I sit for long periods of time, you know, then when I get up, I can feel it in my back area and my rump area where he's, you know, just kind of stiffened up on me and so forth.
Right.
Yeah, that's, you really need to tell them about those symptoms when they go in so that they don't focus just on your knee. Because to me, the back and hip and the tingling probably override the Baker's cyst problem.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Jim. And Tim in Toma, your turn. Hi, Tim.
Hi, how are you doing? Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I've had chronic back pain for some years now. I was injured back on November 29th of 2002. I've had three surgeries, laminectomy, Charte artificial disc, and most recently in September I had a fusion at L5-S1. I am having no relief with my low back pain. I still have the pain in the center of my low back, radiates down into the right cheek, and then down the right leg, normally to about the calf muscle area.
Okay. Are you seeing a physical therapist since the fusion, Tim?
I saw a physical therapist shortly after surgery. We worked on some stretching exercises, and I followed all those, and have just started to see a pain management physician up in La Crosse, and so now we're going to try to look at some alternative ways to try to help deal with why we're still having the pain in the low back area.
Right. You know, I'm sure this has seemed like it's been forever for you. The fact you've had three procedures in a relatively short period of time, I guess I'm not real surprised that you're not feeling great yet in terms of your low back with this fusion.
Okay.
And this, we'll stay under the assumption that the fusion is what you needed. With the previous procedures, the scar tissue, and the impact on the muscles in that area, the surgeries can have. You know, I wouldn't expect you to come around nearly as quickly as someone who had only had one procedure so far. Also, with the what you've gone through, sometimes the rehabilitation can be too much too soon, and just not giving that those structures, including the nerves that get moved around during the surgery, to really get a chance to heal and recover. Again, it's important for conditioning and some aerobic exercise for you, and I would think a pool, if you have access to a pool, would be a really good place where you could do some core stabilization, get some endurance work in, and do some gentle stretching. But in my mind, I would almost rather have you tighten up and get stronger, and then when we're dealing with primarily tightness and not pain, then work on stretching out more aggressively.
Okay.
But I'd like to think that when you go to this program in lacrosse, that those would be things that they would discuss with you. But again, I'm not surprised you're still having some of the problems you're having, considering all that your back has gone through.
Yeah.
Right. Doesn't mean you can't get better. It's just I wouldn't expect it to happen as fast as someone who doesn't have hasn't had as many procedures.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks very much for calling.
Right.
Good luck, Tim.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, appreciate it very much. Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault, our guests today, as we talk with them about aches and pains and sprains and strains. Just to mention, tomorrow Steve Schmidt will be along to talk about preparing your tax returns. I worked on mine yesterday, my wife and I. Yeah, and we got through it without divorce once again, but it was close.
It is a test, isn't it?
It is a test, and we'll be giving you some more tests about aches and pains and sprains and strains as well as we visit with Lori and Bill. Stay with us.
Support for...
If you have a question about one of those aches or pains you have, why, now's the time to call in as we visit with Lori Tyne Brody, senior physical therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center, and Bill Boisenault, associate professor at the UW Medical School. Larry Mueller here. Glad to have you listening in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. And since our lines are all filled, we'll go right back to the phones and Jim in Palmyra. Jim, hello.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
All right, thanks for taking my call. In the late summer of 2002, I was diagnosed with severe spinal stenosis. I lost the Achilles tendon reflex in my right foot. And since then, I had a L4, L5 laminectomy. And since then, well, after the surgery, I was told to keep doing what I normally do to bring the strength back to that calf. And right now, I'm walking kind of flat-footed on my right side. And I was told to keep doing what I normally do, which would be hiking, biking, cross-country skiing. And it has not, the reflex has not come back since then. And I'm wondering if there might be another avenue that I could pursue to hopefully bring this back.
Jim, any residual numbness or weakness, or is it just simply the reflex that is gone?
Well, the reflex is gone, and there is a weakness.
Okay. All right. Yeah, it's more the weakness that can get you into some trouble. And when you have stenosis, simply means narrowing.
Right.
And there are different spots in the spine where if narrowing occurs from a herniated disc or joint degeneration, it compresses the nerves,
mm-hmm.
and it can injure the nerves. And it can become quite severe and limit particularly walking activities. So the surgery you had is the idea is to kind of open up the window to give the nerves more space. And oftentimes people get good pain relief, and many times the sensation comes back, but the strength doesn't always come back.
Mm-hmm.
And typically it's been my experience that the strength has a chance of returning up to about a year after the surgery. After that, it's unlikely you're going to make big gains. And it's not just a matter of the muscle needing to get stronger. It's the nerve and connecting to the muscle that's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a lighting in a house. You know, light bulb can burn out. You change the light bulb, life is good again. The light comes back. But
right.
if something impacts the wiring, which is what happened with you,
right.
the light bulb's fine. It's not turning on. The light bulb is not the problem.
Right.
And so most likely the muscle that's weak is not the problem itself, but it's the wiring. So if it's significantly altering how you walk or run or stair climb, sometimes an orthotic or sometimes a type of a splint for around the foot and the ankle can be very helpful for some of the activities that you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
And again, if I'm not saying you can't get any stronger at all, but you know, most likely you've gained a majority of the strength back that you're going to, considering how long it's been from the surgery.
Mm-hmm.
And one other thing, you can actually, if you try too much strengthening exercise, you can actually fatigue mm-hmm. the muscle, and you mm-hmm. end up being worse off in the short run.
All right. Would it pay to see a neurologist?
You know, in terms of a neurologist, I mean, possibly, but in terms of, you know, rehabilitating your foot and your ankle, well, maybe neurologists, if they did an EMG, they could maybe tell you the specific health of the different nerves that are connecting down to your Achilles area, but also maybe a foot and ankle specialist. So mm-hmm. they could, more from an orthopedic side of things, a physical therapy side of things, to examine your foot from the perspective of an orthotic or maybe a splint or a brace for certain activities
mm-hmm.
Only. Neurologists may give you kind of the long-term prognosis related to the nerves that were impacted by your stenosis.
Okay.
All right. Good luck.
But your activity sounds good. Just be careful with your balance and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Jim. For calling. Appreciate it very much. Katie in Arbor Vitae, your turn. Hi, Katie.
Hi. I'm 14, and I'm a cross-country skier. And after I ski, often I get a pain in the, like, ball thing on, I don't know what to call it, on the outside of your ankle.
Okay.
That bone.
Yep, that bone.
And yeah. It's just a very sharp pain after I ski sometimes, and then when I put pressure on it for, like, a week after, is it the boot?
Can you feel your boot rubbing there?
Not really, but I think it's like there's a plastic support thing on the boot.
Uh-huh.
Is it that?
It's hard to say. Does it, when you take it off and you touch that bone on your ankle, does the bone hurt?
Yeah, it does.
Okay, and that's right where your pain is?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I would check your boot as the first place to look and see if there's something there that's rubbing. A couple things happening there. One, you have a growth plate, and at 14, mm-hmm. it may not be closed yet. So you could be getting some aggravation, a little bit of movement there at the growth plate that's causing some problems. You also have some tendons that course behind there. So if you're tender behind the ankle bone, then that may be a different problem. But if you're getting tenderness right on that bone, I would look for a shoe problem of excessive rubbing.
Okay.
And sometimes you can take some felt or foam and make like a big donut pad or a big U shape around that, and so that the pressure is on the pad and not on the bone itself.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what touches the inside of the boot. The pressure is on the pad around your ankle bone and not directly on your ankle bone.
All right.
And that may help you. If you have an athletic trainer at your school, they might be able mm-hmm. to help you fabricate that.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
All right. Thanks,
good
Katie.
Good luck.
Yeah, good luck. Amy in West Bend. Hi.
Hi. My husband has some shoulder pain that he doesn't think can be helped, but I think it can. And I'm wondering what type of doctor or possibly physical therapist he should go to. It's aggravated when he sleeps on that side.
Uh-huh.
And his occupation is a police officer.
Uh-huh.
He's also on the SWAT team and carries a very heavy shield.
Uh-huh.
That aggravates it, along with push-ups that he has to do to maintain his...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep, so, yep.
Just wondering if there's...
Yes, there is. It sounds like a fairly classic rotator cuff, subacromial impingement kind of complex. Hurts more at night when you lay on that side because of pressure on that bursa. You get actual direct pressure in. I think you get some swelling because you're not moving your arm around a lot, and so it swells a little more, causes pain that radiates down into the outside of your arm. Push-ups are notorious for causing rotator cuff problems. There are a number of things that a physical therapist could do. I would see a physical therapist. Sometimes you need to see your primary care physician first to get a referral. Depends upon your insurance plan. But a couple of visits to get set up on a program to help with the rotator cuff strength can really help.
Okay.
What you end up with is a big imbalance when you do a lot of push-ups. Big muscles overpower the small ones. Then you add on to that the heavy stuff he has to carry around puts constant tension on your rotator cuff.
Okay.
So there are certainly some things that can be done. And if he lets it go long enough, you know, he'll end up with a chronic tendonitis. He'll end up with a rotator cuff tear.
Yes. He was thinking it was tendonitis or rotator cuff.
Yeah, well, a rotator cuff is the tendonitis. Yeah, rotator cuff tendonitis. But if it goes on long enough, you can develop a rotator cuff tear.
Okay. Yeah, I will let him know that.
I think in terms of convincing your husband, it sounds like there's some help that he could be given, but at a minimum, make sure it doesn't get any worse so it doesn't develop into what Lori just described, because then it could impact what he's doing for his work, his vocation.
Yeah.
And there are lots of ways to strengthen around the shoulder and upper back besides push-ups. So they can maybe look at what his workout program is and maybe just make some modifications to minimize the stress on that area.
Okay.
All right.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Talk to him, Amy. Thanks a lot for calling. Some guys are like that, you know?
Yes.
But not us, Larry.
No. Geraldine in Madison. Hi.
Hello. I'm a baby boomer, and I hear a lot of baby boomer calls coming in. But this is not for me. This is for my father, who is older. And he has problems with his knees, and I believe it's one of those arthritis or something like that. He has a very good, caring primary physician, but he lives in a small, little town. I'm trying to find out what would be some of the diagnostics tools to find out what possibly some other alternative treatments. He gets these shots every so often, but they don't last that long, and they're painful, and they're very expensive. And I want to look at some alternative things, not surgery, but some alternative things that maybe would be available to him, I can suggest to him. I've heard something about, an infrared light or something? I look at some of those info commercials, and I don't know if they work or not. But, again, I'm not looking for something real invasive for him because he is an older person. But it just bothers me. He's not a sedentary person, and these knees are really slowing him down. He is retired now, but he's not the type of person who likes to just sit around, but his knees bother him a lot.
Uh-huh. Well, there are some things out there depending upon the extent of the arthritis and the location of the arthritis. A physical therapy program of some specific exercises can help minimize the stresses on his knee. They can teach him some movement patterns, how to move, get in and out of a chair, get in and out of a car in a way that won't hurt his knees. So, you know, that's one approach, some specific strengthening that will help take some of the stress off his knee. That will help. There are also some braces, some very specific braces designed to, they're called unloader braces, to unload a degenerative component of the knee. So depending upon the location of his arthritis, that may or may not help him. A lot of people like that. An exercise program in the water would be really useful for him.
Some aquatic sort of exercises?
Yes, some aquatic exercises. It help keep him active but not put so much stress on his knees.
Mm-hmm. So I can just, and I don't know if he will do it. I may have to do it, but as his primary physician for referral to see a physical therapist?
Yes. Yep.
Now, would he be, now he's not into sports or something, but is that, would it be also available that if that doesn't work, I can ask for a referral to some of the sports specialists or not?
Absolutely. You know, if he's an active individual, just because he's not playing basketball doesn't mean he's not physically active. So those same principles apply to your father's age group.
Good luck, Geraldine. Thanks a lot for calling. Deb in Sturgeon Bay, it's your turn. Hi, Deb.
Hi there. I have a question. In the spot where you get your epidural, I don't know if it's related to that or if it's just improper. Well, like when I sit on the ground, like Indian style, for a long period of time, that area will be very tender to the pressure. But then from that point down to about mid-thigh, I have like a soreness. So I don't know if I'm
And you had an epidural.
Yeah, I had to
one in 2001 and one in 2003.
Okay.
So I wasn't sure if it's related or if it's just posture issues.
Well, it may or may not be related, but it sounds like there's a connection between what you feel in that spot and what you feel down lower.
Right.
Okay. And is it both thighs or one thigh, Deb?
It's both.
It is both. Okay.
Yep.
And any symptoms below the knees, numbness or pain or tingling?
No. Okay. It pretty much stops about mid-thigh.
Okay. All right. Have you seen a physical therapist for these symptoms?
I went in and questioned the pressure point mm-hmm. in that area. And I am being treated for physical therapy, but they said that the pain's probably associated to, they said my pelvic seems like it's tilted and twisted a little.
Okay.
So they're trying to do strengthening training to then, after the strengthening training, to try to adjust it.
Okay.
With medicine. But I was just kind of curious about that pressure point being so tender around the same area that it was possibly where the epidural was placed.
Yeah. Usually, if you can get your finger on a spot in the spine and it's a tender spot, it's not directly related to symptoms you would get that far down into your legs.
Okay.
Usually, it's tissues that are deeper than that that would be causing it. But you know, the core strengthening and around the pelvis is a good idea for most people. There's certain types of stretching that allows you to gently mobilize the nerves and the dura that where the injection goes to.
Okay.
Called neuromobilization. You can maybe mention that to your therapist and see if that's something that they may have addressed it, but maybe not have.
Okay.
And that includes things like slump sit stretching or straight leg raise stretching that they could try with you and see if maybe that may be a relevant part of your program.
Okay.
But it certainly is possible that if you have some malalignment within your pelvis that it could give you the symptoms that you have. But if that's the case, you should be starting to get better within 4 to 6 weeks.
4 to 6 weeks?
Yes.
Okay. I just started the regimen, so.
Okay.
Okay, that's good to hear.
All right, thanks,
Thank
Deb.
Thank you for your time.
You bet. Bye-bye. And Jim in Bailey's Harbor, your turn. Hi, Jim.
Hi, thank you. Thank you. I've been having some foot problems. I've been wearing orthotics for about 10 years, and on my right foot, I noticed my big toe and second toe are starting to migrate a little bit to the right, and right in the center of my metatarsal joints and they're getting very sore. That metatarsal pad is very sore in the morning when I start walking.
Mm-hmm.
And I've talked to my podiatrist who made the orthotics, and he said, well, there's not much you can do about that. And I just wondered, this doesn't look good to me, and it's been painful for about a year.
Huh. Well, I would have to agree with you. That doesn't look good. You've had the same orthotic for 10 years?
Well, I mean, it's been rebuilt a couple mm-hmm. times. The last time was about a month ago.
Okay. Yeah, it sounds like you're getting, like you're pronating, either you're pronating
yeah.
over the top of your orthotic or something, because you're having some abnormal foot mechanics that's
yeah.
causing your big toe to push over towards your second toe, and it's
yeah.
creating, you know, you may be getting some gapping or some other abnormal weight bearing across your metatarsal heads.
Sure.
So I'd go see a physical therapist who can do a good gait analysis to look
okay.
at your foot posture, a gait analysis, and you may need a metatarsal pad or something else to alter the biomechanics, but the biomechanics of your foot are not right. What happens is you're apparently rolling off the inside of your big toe, and that's pushing your big toe over.
Uh-huh.
So we need something, either an orthotic or some modification to change that loading pattern.
Okay.
So I would go see somebody else with some expertise in the foot and ankle, take your orthotics in, take your shoes in, and have them take a look at it and do a good analysis and figure out. But it's good of you to call before things get too far out of hand
uh-huh.
and you develop a big bunion there.
Yeah.
But that's, yeah, the abnormal mechanics is a problem.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks, Jim.
Thank you.
Karen in Yuba, it's your turn. Hi, Karen.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have joint pain all over my body, and I should say that I was diagnosed about 3 years ago with surviving hepatitis C. And for years and years and years, I went to doctors, and I told them I was really sick, and
they kept saying there was nothing wrong with me. It was all psychosomatic. And then 3 years ago, some doctors said that I had the antibodies for the hepatitis C, but they couldn't find the active live virus in my blood anymore. And at that point, I was too sick to work anymore, and so then I lost my medical coverage. And they said that I have problems with anything that's repetitive, and it's true. Anything I do, if I do it on an ongoing basis, day after day, whether it's potting plants or washing dishes or cutting onions, walking, it doesn't matter. I can change activities and then the pain goes away. But as soon as you engage in a different activity, the joints involved in that new activity will cause problems. And I haven't been able to see a doctor because I don't have any medical coverage. And this is getting really frustrating because I can't even develop new activities that I enjoy.
Yes.
Karen, do you have access to a pool anywhere in your community?
Yeah.
Have you tried any kind of exercise program or activity in the water?
I love swimming, but I just haven't done much, in the last, 10 years.
Okay. Swimming is one option. There's lots of other kinds of exercise activity you can do in the water, which, again, the joints are unloaded.
Right.
I do hear you that anything you do long enough starts to cause problems, and that's where kind of cross-training comes into play. But I would think the water would be probably the most user-friendly medium for you to get the biggest benefit in terms of building up some endurance and some strength around those joints that may help build up your endurance for some of the activities that you mentioned.
Yeah, and I agree with Bill. I wouldn't do swimming. I think swimming's going to be too repetitive and too hard on your joints, but doing a mix of walking, some arm movements, some leg movements, some marching, starting very slowly and working your way up.
In the water.
In the water, yes.
There may be some group classes mm-hmm. that are offered in your community. If you could call the different pools and see what they offer that generally are relatively inexpensive. Anything above that, even one or two visits with a physical therapist, that should be enough to get you started on a good pool program, including teaching you how to progress, knowing when to progress activity. But I would look into some of the group classes that are offered for folks in your area.
Okay.
Okay, well, thank you.
Yeah,
good
thanks.
Luck.
Good luck, Karen. Thank you. And Nancy in Stoughton, hi.
Hi there.
What can we do for you? We've got about a minute and a half.
Well, about 2 weeks ago, I was discharged from the hospital with next to no diagnosis. No fancy Greek or Latin words. All they said was, the circulation is in your toes. Quit smoking or face an amputation. And I wonder, is there anything I can do to improve my circulation in my toes? It's probably a congenital situation.
Okay, Bill?
Well, if it's congenital, it limits what can be done. There are times where certain kinds of exercises can promote circulation, collateral circulation in different parts of the body. But if there are other health issues, whether it's heart or lung, you want to work very closely with your physician and a PT to make sure that it's not done too hard, too fast, because you put people at a big risk for their heart. So I'd like to think if you haven't discussed that particularly with your physician, I would go back and make a phone call and talk to the office there and see if a consult with a physical therapist might be appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's congenital, it may not be.
But your doctor's right that smoking is going to be the best thing for improving your circulation.
Yeah. Thanks very much for calling, and good luck to you, Nancy. And Bill and Lori, thank you so much. You'll be back about a month or so. We'll do
sure.
this.
We will.
You bet.
Yep.
Thanks so much. Lori Tyne-Brody, a senior physical therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center, and Bill Boisenault, associate professor with the UW Medical School, our guests, and they'll be back again in a month, and we'll talk with them some more. Tomorrow, again, it's Madison CPA Steve Schmidt has some advice for preparing your tax returns. Hope you'll tune in, and I hope you'll stay with us. Lots in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.